Yes, guys, what's good? You tuned into Mango Masala. My name's Gaines. I'm here with Halima.
We're back. You know that TikTok sound?
Yeah. With the Kardashians. We're going to do it after.
We're going to do it. You're going to see it.
Yeah, we're back. The mic's actually on.
Have people been messaging us?
No, you know what? No.
Which is kind of usually like, they do, yeah. Usually they do.
No, which has been, obviously that's been really nice before, like, for example, when it was my wedding or other stuff, and they've been like, oh. But you know what is nice? Like, just before we've been on this break, like, there were a couple of instances in very quick succession where, like, people have come up to me and had said about, oh, like, we really like what you're doing, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, for context...
all of this to say, guys, yeah, we have been gone for a bit.
Yeah, like, I think our last episode was the end of May. We have basically took June and July off. Initially, the plan was just June. Yeah. And then on my call, I was like, I want to do July as well.
Yeah.
Various reasons, from my point of view.
Life's been beating our asses, like, essentially.
Like a lot of work stresses. I've just been like, I can't give. Like, I need to actually rest outside of work. Like, it's just a bit too much at the moment. And yourself, you're obviously, I mean, just before as well, you moved to London. And we didn't really, like, stop. We just kept going, like...
Yeah. I moved to London, but it wasn't an easy move. It was, like... I basically, within the space of, like, 2 weeks... No, within the space of 3 weeks, I got the job offer. I found a house. I packed up everything in Manchester, moved to London, unpacked. Within, like, a week, I repacked, went to a new house, unpacked then, had to come back to Manchester, changed my car... Yeah.
Bear in mind, like...
In my first week of work.
Yeah.
And I've not worked for, like, over a year.
It was a lot to take on. And also, like, the reasons why you had to move out of the first house, which we're not going to go into, but that in itself was, like,
intense. That would be a juicy story time. But it would. But maybe one day. Not right now. But
yeah, it's a
crazy
lot.
Landlord, let's just say. Crazy landlord situation. It was a lot. I was even homeless for a few days in between. Like, I left without actually having secured, like... accommodation, like another accommodation. It wasn't confirmed, like, and I was like, I'm not staying in this place. I literally had a crazy landlord. All in my first week of work and going to the office, which for me is like genuinely very brand new, like
in London.
In my previous roles, like, I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I went into the office in my old job, whereas in this one, like, I'm in every single week. So
and we just kept on going, didn't we? And there was also the other very big change, which we've not properly addressed, like, on here, which is, you might notice, obviously, it's just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Yeah. Sadly. Simran is no longer
She's no longer with us. She's very much alive. Yeah. She's just no longer with us.
Yeah, basically. The thing is, it sounds wrong for me to say she's no longer a member of Mango Masala, because she always will.
She'll always be a member of Mango Masala.
But yeah,
she lives in our hearts, guys.
Yeah, I mean,
her presence is here in every episode.
It's good news is that Simran got a really good job. It's something that she's really excited about. Something that now that we're like a couple of months down the line, she said she is really enjoying it, and it's really like what she wants to do. The sad thing about it was when she got this job, they basically said, you can't really have a social media presence, which obviously we kind of do have a bit of a presence on social media, saying some borderline controversial things, which, it shouldn't really be controversial, a lot of the things that we say,
it's sensitive. She works with, like, vulnerable
opinionated people.
So one of her conditions of employment was that she's not allowed to have a social media presence, and unfortunately she had to make the decision that's best for her, and we obviously fully, completely support that. There's always a place for her when she wants to come back. And we miss her. Carlos and I were literally just saying, like, Simran, we miss you. Like,
I think that's
we're feeling
lot.
Your absence.
It says a lot as well, given how the past couple of years her presence has been virtual for the most part.
Yeah.
The fact that we're still missing
her. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I think, we'd like a perfect little trio, didn't we?
Yeah.
And miss you, girl.
Yeah. But I'd say it's obviously deep down inside, it's a bit sad. Like,
it's bittersweet because obviously we're still very happy for someone.
But it is also really good that at least it's worth it. Like, this job actually is, like, it's giving what it needed to give more.
And if she went and she hated it, I would have been like, quit and come back. Come on, girl. But no.
So, I suppose, like, for the foreseeable, it's just us two.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. I hope we're enough. I hope you can please, accept us.
Like, no, the Punjabi community, please, yeah. Like, still tune in.
Still fuck with us. Come on, yeah. Guys.
Yeah. That's also why, like, I really want to do something on socials, just acknowledge and also thank Simran for everything she's given. But I'm also wary of when I do that, what if all of our followers that do follow because
think
of
she's
Simran?
Dead.
Even that. It's what if they then, like, nah, you know what? I was only following this because of Simran anyway. Bye-bye. Like, we'd hope, but... Yeah,
we should just get like a little graphic of her, just like in all of
our cardboard cutout,
little cardboard cutout of Simran. She's here in presence.
But yeah, so basically that change happened. Like I think I want to say it was May. Mm. Yeah, and
I think you probably wouldn't have noticed it because we've actually only just like 2 episodes since.
Yeah, so and it's quite normal for like maybe either Haleem or Simran to not be around for like an episode or something. But
here on out, guys.
Yeah, but that change had happened, and then Haleema had moved to London and had all that stuff going on, and then it was kind of like
we also left Pi. Like I know we've mentioned it before, but we did also leave Pi, and that changed like our entire kind of like platforming service, like how we come to you guys. We are like a bit more of an on-demand podcast now. Yeah. If anyone's watching and they want to
sponsor us
or platform us or throw some money our way, we are now unaffiliated and completely open. So
well, I think we said before, like there is a certain level of liberation that comes with that as well. Like for example, you already swore like even like 2 minutes in, it's just like cool. That's
I can say it.
Yeah. But,
I cuss a little. You know that Miranda.
What's your favourite swear word then?
Fuck. You know that meme.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah.
But, yeah. What we were also saying as well, like, just before we clip record, how nice this feels to, like, actually be back behind the mic. Like, also,
We've missed it, yeah.
Like, I know it's not gonna be every week now because, obviously, Haleem is still in London, that we are going to be in the same room together, but it feels nice to like just
Having said that, I'm flipping always here, man. Mm. Like I've been gone for like over two months, and I think I've been back like 6 times.
Yeah,
I'm here now for like 2.5 weeks.
Yeah,
it's for my cousin's wedding, but still.
Yeah.
But no, we've missed it. Like even though we've needed to take the time, Carlos and I, over the past few weeks especially, have been kind of saying to each other, like, oh, we miss being on the mic. And we hope you guys have missed us too, even though you've not said it. I hope you have.
Yeah. You know what it is? Maybe it's because, like, I was still uploading the new music Friday, so, like, it's clear that it's still something's happening. But I don't know. But, yeah, we're back, ready to get kickback started into things.
In the midst of summer, shall we have a bit of a catch up? What else has been new with you? Is there anything other than your job beating your ass?
Nothing that much. Just like summer. It's just summer. A lot of weddings. A lot of like adult things, I would say. Like just really kind of having to understand that like you can't. Like even though like as an adult your time is your own.
Right.
Like still like having to do certain. You just have to use your time for other things sometimes, and like that just is the way the life is. That's something that I've kind of struggled with, is just being like, well, why? If it's my time, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? But
that's good. I feel like when Carlos was coming, and this is like typical Carlos, I do feel like the past few months I hope been a bit of a learning curve for you, because Carlos is kind of does take a lot on and does do a lot, and you're not always good at saying no carving out time for yourself, you know, even, and it's not even boundaries, because it's not like people are saying you have to do this. It's like you'll take it on, you know. And I think this past few months, there's been a few instances where it's like the whole way it started was we started recording like in May, and I was like, wait, hang on, actually, I'm moving around a lot. Like, I don't have a working mic at the minute, I don't have a desk at the minute. Like, should we take some time off, reorientate? And Carlos was like, yeah, I'm glad you said it, you know. And then we had like some other video ideas, and then we're running with it. And then I would be the one to be like, oh, it's not quite working out. And Carlos will then be like, yeah, I'm glad you said it, you know. So it's good to learn that you, and but then to be fair, you were the one to say, actually, you want to extend it. you know, yeah, through July. So
exactly, and it, I wouldn't normally, I would have like,
you just soldiered on. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a lesson, I think, for everyone, really, to, it's okay to sometimes stop, you know, like, this is a long running platform. Like, we've been doing this for what, coming up to five years.
Yeah. And you know, normally podcasts will do like seasons. Like, I know we just say every new year is a season.
Yeah.
But like normally it'll be like a set number of episodes, right, like running time, like a lot shorter, not every single week, which is exactly what we have been doing, like basically for like nearly 5 years.
Like that is momentous, you know, apart from like a few weeks over Christmas when everything is shut down, or like the time over your wedding, like we are literally every single week. And I think it is all right sometimes to say, actually, need to stop, need to catch my breath, need to reorientate. You know, you can't pour from an empty cup, guys. So anyone out there who is feeling a little bit burned out, because I feel like in your mid to late 20s, I feel it's a very common thing. It happens to people. You get very burnt out. And I think it's good to be able to say, hey, give me some time.
I mean, that's just really reminded me how we are approaching basically your
don't say it 20s. My family, now their favorite phrase to me when they're trying to piss me off is, you're pushing 30. How the fuck did I get, if not, this is not a conversation we're gonna have to do, because I will spiral.
Yeah, we're trying to keep the positive energy.
Oh, I have an existential spiral. Yeah, guys,
right,
but it's nearly my birthday.
Yeah, that's positive. Kind of. Not maybe not this birthday in particular, but
I need to book my birthday trip, actually.
But how have you been otherwise? You've got a lot of wedding stuff going on, both like your sister and now your cousin as well.
My sister's wedding was like end of April, and then literally immediately after my sister's, all her, because the thing is like, we don't just have an event, we have like 10 pre-events, 10 post-events. So then her wedding events were going till like the end of April, start of May. That's when I then moved, and I had that back and forth. And then I've only just settled, and now my cousin's wedding stuff has been going on for the past few weeks, which has been hectic and intense, but also amazing and incredible. Like, I love a family wedding.
Do you think it's maybe a bit more, you're able to enjoy it maybe slightly more when your house isn't the wedding house? Like, you're able to go somewhere, like, and then come home. And I know you're coming home like 2-3, but you're able to kind of still have your own space as opposed to literally living.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's a very small consolation, to be honest with you, because again, like with my family, the way that we are, I know I've spoken about in this show, but like all my cousins are like my siblings, you know? So it's like, we're in it. And you know the thing with my family is, right, is they are some DIY merchants. My God, they love to do everything DIY. And it's not even a case of like, oh, we're not even trying to save money or nothing, because I guarantee you, you probably end up spending more sourcing all the bits and bobs that you need to make something for yourself than you would have just if you hired someone.
Yeah.
The stock that my family, that my sisters and my cousins have between them, they can open a shop, they can open a wedding events company. They love to do everything DIY. So for the past few weeks, that's what I've been doing, just everything DIY. But it is very good fun. It is very good fun. But otherwise, I've just been enjoying London. I've just been enjoying summer. We had like a heat wave, which was very intense. There were some days where it even got a bit too much for me. Like I was every hour having to go into the car to sit in the AC because it was that hot. And I'm like a lizard, I don't sweat. And there'll be times where the journey to and from work, oh my God. Like, and the tube isn't the worst part, it's the bus.
Really?
I'll be stood on the bus and I'll feel sweat on me. And the feeling of sweating is very new to me. Like, I don't sweat. So that was fun. I went to the Seychelles.
Oh yeah.
I went to the Seychelles, guys. It's not been a big travel year for me because I was broke. Spent all my money traveling.
I love how you still managed to go to Seychelles, though, because it's not like that's like, oh, I'm just gonna to Spain or something. Yeah, like.
But this was like, basically the story with me going to the Seychelles was my baby sister, when she was like 14, I think she was watching TikTok together, and she'd seen a TikTok of it, and she was like, oh wow. And I just said in passing, like, oh, I'll take you when you're like 16 or something, just in passing, you know, you're just being affectionate to your sister. This bitch, she hit her 16th birthday. She's really come to collect. She was like, so are we going or what? Are we going? And me, I can't say no. So
you gotta respect it.
I got to honour my word, guys. If nothing, I am a woman of my word. So we ended up going to the Seychelles, and it was incredible. It was amazing. Yes. I know you went for your honeymoon. Honestly.
It's nice.
It's just so worth the hype. Had the time of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nice. That's me. That's what you guys have missed.
The only other update, which I did text you about, which is just funny.
Fucking Kingsway.
So this is a public service announcement for anyone that lives in the South Manchester area. Kingsway, all up and down it, now 30 miles per hour.
You're not the first person. Several family members have messaged me. My mom has come into my room to be like, by the way. My sisters have come into my room to be like, by the way. Mm.
And then literally, like, the second I saw it, I was like, the first thing I need to do is text Halima because I know this is going to be an issue.
What is that about? What have you done that for, Andy Burnham?
I do think...
I get it, for public safety.
Yeah. You know, I'm surprised that it's last this long. You know, like, because Princess Bowie has been, like...
33.
Yeah, it used to be 40 and they went to 30. I'm surprised that Kingsway lasted this
long. That road is fucking painful to drive on.
What? Princess Park.
Because it's like Kingsway, where it's bare speed cameras as well. It's not like... I'm not saying that I do this or that you should do this, but sometimes when there's big gaps between speed cameras, you can speed up a bit. Hypothetically, you could. But in fucking Princess Park, we like, it's a speed camera literally every flipping 3 yards.
It's just... It is just weird, isn't it? It's weird how much you're like, I know this is quite like, it's quite boring, right? But it just feels weird to like have to do that because you just I associate my like Kingsway just with like driving down and just be like, yeah, straight down. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's so painful as well because obviously the last few weeks or whatever, I've been coming back and forth from my house and my uncle's house and my uncle lives down there and I live on one end of Kingsway. So this is the road. I drive down Kingsway every single day.
Yeah.
And at night, at like 2, 3 a.m., where it's empty, and your impulse is to just put your foot down a little bit, and you can't. It's painful.
You know, that being said, I will say that obviously Kingsway has become, or has been for a long time, a bit of a racetrack for various people, which we have spoken about, largely the young British Asian
community. There have been a lot of. The feds are always there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always, yeah.
But at the same time, like, do you feel that bringing in speed cameras actually serves to reduce the amount of like speeding or racing or like
the speed camera is.
Like, do you feel like it actually acts as a deterrent or no?
I don't know. I'd have to see the statistics. I mean, I guess it must do because otherwise they wouldn't do it.
I don't know. It's more just funny that when you text back, you're like, yeah, you're literally like the 59th person
to tell me this.
I was like, yeah, well.
Unfortunately, my reputation precedes me.
But yeah, this is a warning for anyone else. Be careful. Because you know what the annoying thing is as well? I don't know when it's like officially coming into place, but there was a point where they hadn't put all the signs up. And it was just
my mum and my sister got gripped a bit.
Yeah, like, they're like a tiny ones and just randomly popped up and was like, wait, what? Is it 40 or 30? Like, what's going on?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure surely they'll do a bit of a grace.
But yeah, and also during the off period, I got parking fine thing, which was literally after Halima had all her drama about her.
Oh my God, guys, an update. Do you remember that day? Have I even told you?
I don't think you've told these about the fact that for the context, we're speaking about when Halima spoke about when she literally got a parking warning for parking outside her own house.
Apparently it wasn't a warning. Mm. They're taking me to court.
Yeah.
Have I told you that?
You have told me
they're taking me. Yeah. Fucking God, what the fuck? So basically, the story goes, this was even before they put double yellows on my line. Like, I've lived at that house for like a decade and a half or whatever, and we've never had double yellows. The mosque now has an extension. It becomes a lot more busy at the end of my road. And now, obviously, you know, people come to pray at the mosque, and because my house is in close, my road is in very close vicinity, people park in the, you know, it's usually for like an hour or two during Jummah on a Friday. So it's like manageable, it's fine. But obviously all the fucking residents are now up in arms about it. So they've put double yellows on. But my car, I park it on, obviously, the side, like literally just outside of my driveway. And this was before we got double yellows. They give me a parking like warning. And then a letter come in to be like, you need to send your details off. However, the police, we've had several kerfuffles with the police. Like they've done it to loads of people in my house where they keep giving us tickets. And one time, like but basically, if we park too much into the pavement, they give us a ticket. But if we park too much out of the pavement, the residents complain that their cars can't get through. So then the police, this is actually really funny, my sister filmed it. The police come on knocking one door one day and there's like three cars outside my house. And they said, they spoke to my dad and they were like, you need to move your cars outwards because it's too much into the pavement. And then my dad did it. And then the police, 10 minutes later, they came back in being like, Can you move your cars back because we can't get through? My dad was like, you see what I fucking mean? Like, what are we supposed to do? But they keep giving us these letters. And they've since told us, like, okay, you should appeal. Like, you guys are the residents. We thought you were just, like, one of the mosque goers, which is in itself a bit brazy. It's brazy. But they told us to appeal. So I didn't give my information when they asked for it. I tried to appeal. I've emailed them and stuff like that. And then I get a fucking court summons. I get a court summons in the post. I'm thinking, what? They told me to appeal. I've emailed them. Oh, my God. Anyways, we'll see what happens. Flipping nonsense.
Or for parking outside your own house.
For my own fucking house. Can you believe it? But they've done this several times. My sister, apparently, when they give you this notice, you don't get points because obviously I'm a bit, I already have some points on my license as per the previous discussion.
Some points.
Some points on my license as per the previous discussion. So I don't want to give my details in case I put points on and then I can't reverse it. But then my sister gave her information and it's just a £25 fine.
Who's at the door?
Are you expecting anyone?
I've let them in. Whoever it is has got a tattoo on their neck that says blessed. So you know what? I'll take it, you know.
Well, have you got a camera?
Yeah, so you can see, like, but it, obviously it's not directly on them. I could just see their neck and they got a tattoo that says blessed on it. So hopefully that means that they're
probably
okay.
Trying to come in and they've just rang, like, every door. Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, they probably got the wrong door. Anyways, GMP.
Yeah.
Not happy with you.
Also Manchester Council in general, because let me tell my story really
oh,
quick.
Oh, go on.
I parked in a car park in Northern Quarter at NCP, and I think because I'm just so used to all the car parks that I regularly go to are ones where you go and then you pay on exit, like, and it's that kind of one. So I was running late, so I literally just parked and went straight to dinner and whatever, came back, and the first thing I noticed when I walked back was a sign saying pay on arrival. I was like, fuck's sake. So then I was like, you know what, let me just go and pay for the amount of time that I have been here, like as in pay for like 3 hours or whatever it was, just to be safe. So I did that and then came back to my car and saw that I had got a parking ticket. So I was like, right, great. So I thought, you know what, I might as well try and appeal, like, what's the like harm in doing that? So I appealed and explained how it was a simple mistake. I also said I have actually paid for the amount of time that I was there. And I also asked, even if you're not gonna like take the appeal or whatever, can you please consider deducting the amount of money that I have paid, like, because like from the parking fine? And they just replied back saying like no. So I was like, great. So yeah,
welcome to the dark side. Can I tell you something? Your story just reminded me. I also got another parking ticket at the same time.
Another one?
Did I tell you what for? I get them all the time. Like, it's nothing new. Did I tell you what happened? This is in London. This is how treacherous life in London is, guys. How treacherous it is. Beckton Retail Park, it will never be well with you. I'm naming and shaming. It will never be well with you. Oh, my God. Carlos, this is like when I just moved in. And you know what my situation is, guys. I've told you I was stressed and whatever. I needed a mirror. Beckton Retail Park was like a 10-15 minute drive from where I was staying at the time. I drove over. It was like 6-7 p.m. So like they're about to close. Most of the other shops have closed. I went to Dunelm to just get a mirror. Just grab a mirror. That's all. I was going in and out. Everything else is closed. The car park is empty. I just pulled up very haphazardly and I just parked very haphazardly into a bay. Got my mirror, I went home. And then I come back to Manchester a few weeks later. Why the fuck have I got a letter for a £100 parking fine because half my bumper was out of the bay? I'm trying to find the picture now to show to you. Like, it was half of... It wasn't, like... I don't even know what to say. I don't know if I'll find it. I'll show it to you afterwards. But
in an empty car park as well.
In an empty car park. That's what I'm trying to say. It was at the end of the day, it was an empty car park. Half of my bumper was out the bay and they charged me £100. And I did actually appeal it to them. At that point, I think the initial charge was 60 and it went up to 100 because obviously they'd sent it to my home address, but I wasn't living there. So then it was like a final reminder. Oh my God, these lot. And I even wrote an email to them being like, hello, my friend, I'm not living there anymore. Like, look at this tenancy agreement. It will tell you. But by that point, they'd sent debt recovery. CCJ, they were going to put a CCJ in my account. Can you imagine? But then eventually, I think they got my letter and they were like, fine, as a gesture of goodwill, we'll let you pay the original amount, which was £60, which is still fucking egregious for half a bumper out the bay on an empty car park. Just wanted my mirror.
It's mad. Right, now that we've spent, what is that, half an hour speaking about, like, parking tickets and all that.
It's an endless stuff. Conversation yeah. for me.
Let's go on to some more Bad Vibes Island, bringing it back. Because what would this podcast show, whatever you want to call it, what would it be without that?
What would it be?
Well, let's start it off on like a relatively positive note, in our opinion. Zara Sultana has officially left the Labour Party and has decided that she's going to set up her own new party, leading which with Jeremy Corbyn. Which obviously...
If you've ever watched a single second of the show, you know what we think about that.
Yeah. Or one of us especially has very strong feelings
about Jezza. I do indeed. Yeah. I do indeed. I think it's... Okay. I am very happy, but I am also tentatively so.
Apprehensive, like, yeah. Yeah.
As always, because it's no secret how much I love Jezza. It's no secret. I love him. I think he is the single most principled mainstream politician. I don't even want to say in my lifetime, but for a very long time. Very, very, very long time. And I feel like I'd become very disillusioned with not just the Labour Party after Corbyn's loss. Oh, I don't even want to talk about it. But just generally Westminster politics, you know, I think I'm very, like, I believe more, my personal kind of political sensibilities, I believe more in, like, kind of grassroots level of politics, like mutual aid, you know, that's kind of where my political sensibilities are. I don't believe in that institutional politics. I mean, it's not that I don't believe in it, it's a thing, it's real, it exists. I'm just not very personally invested in it because particularly under Starmer's premiership, I feel like obviously Labour have moved more and more to the right. And I really don't see any, and particularly in light of kind of the genocide in Palestine, I've just not seen much discernible difference between them and, let's say, the Tories, for example.
Yeah. Or like now, who's a very like strong contender during the next election, Reform.
Reform, right. The rise of Reform.
That's one of the things that Zara said is that part of the reason why she's left Labour is that she feels you can't combat Reform by mimicking them.
You can't.
And that's exactly what we've seen, like, right. Such like a strong push on issues such as immigration, debate on whether or not to suspend the two-child benefit cap. And that was initially why Zara was suspended from the Labour Party, right. Because she chose to abolish this.
And that in itself is, like, I always say that it's absolutely mental that MPs can get punished for voting against the consensus of the party, because it's like, I understand you don't want factionalism, I understand that that's counterproductive, but the whole point of the MP is to speak to the wishes of their constituents, not, like, I feel like that should be primary priority rather than the interests of the party. You know, the party's there to serve the people, not the other way around.
Yeah, and you can understand that, obviously, you all belong to the same party because your values somewhat align in the same way. But that shouldn't mean that you're therefore bound to vote, because otherwise what is the point of having MPs? You might as well
central government. Yeah. That's it. I know exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have created, is it your party?
Well, this is part of what I wanted to discuss about in terms of the rollout of this, because in positive news, over 600,000 people have signed up. It shows a strong will amongst like
people to yeah,
to sign up for it and to be aligned with what this party stands for. And I think it's about time, because like I think there's been a sentiment for a long time that Labour just doesn't represent the people that it used to or is supposed to.
Absolutely. I feel like there've been a lot of disillusionment with people who are kind of typical stronghold Labour supporters. I think Starmer has lost a lot of Labour supporters, I'll be honest with you. I think especially, like I keep saying, in light of the Palestinian genocide.
I think the only thing that I kind of makes me quite apprehensive about this whole thing is just the rollout of this in general. I feel it hasn't been that strong. I don't know if that's just me like trying to stay realistic with myself and like try not to get too hyped about it. But I just feel like thinking about things, right? Zara made this announcement like on a random like Thursday evening. It was just like there. I was like, okay, cool. And it was like a big thing. Like I'm leaving Labour, and also I'm starting this new party co-leading with Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn then didn't actually acknowledge it until like 24 hours later. And
they need you on the marketing team. Yeah,
and even then, it was kind of like not really. He didn't really confirm whether or not.
I think that's the bit in all of this where I'm just a bit apprehensive, because I've been burnt, guys. I really, that 2019 election fucking burned me. Like, I'm scarred, and it's like I try now to temper my kind of hopes and ambitions a little bit when it comes to Corbyn, to be honest with you, because I feel like inevitably kind of the people I surround myself in and the kind of content that I see on my algorithms on social media, it is a bit of an echo chamber, and I'm completely fine with that. I don't want to see no Tories. I don't want to see no fascists on my timeline. Like, I'm very happy in my little, you know, political space where I'm at. But obviously, you know, sometimes you see if everyone that you're seeing is like hyped about it and everyone else is, you know, speaking good into it, sometimes you can kind of make yourself believe like, oh my God, yeah, this could be a thing. Like, they seem to have good momentum. Like, maybe we're on the cusp of some real change. And then you forget the flipping what the rest of the British body politic is. Yeah. And then you just get a very harsh reality check.
Like, you know what? So like, we're going to speak a bit about Palestine in a bit, but it was just a TikTok came up on my feed from BBC News, and it was the first Palestinian person, and it was this child, and it was the first Palestinian person to be treated in the UK.
Right.
Like, and he had very obvious like facial injuries that he'd undergone as a result of what's going on over there. And the top three comments were all, why is he being treated in the UK? Is there no nearer hospitals like to Gaza than the UK? Why are they treating him rather than us people? I'm like, you've literally got a child that's very obviously injured in front of you. Why is that even coming to your mind?
This fucking mental, seriously, like Western, if I say what I want to say, like, I'll get cancelled for life. But like, the people in the West in general, like Western culture, Western politics, Western demographics are so devoid of any humanity. Like, when it comes to, you know, people of the global South, particularly, you know, like Muslims or brown people or black people or whatever, like, they're just so devoid of like empathy and compassion, because it's like you said, on a human level, you've seen a young person like disfigured and your thought isn't like, I'm glad they were able to get treatment. Secondly, you know, you're so up in arms and you're giving this like political commentary, like, what the fuck are you on about? Like, Britain is sending arms to Israel to this day. They're sharing intelligence with Israel to this day. How the fuck do you know it wasn't a British manufactured bomb that fell on him? How the fuck do you know that? You know, like, Britain has a very, very clear line of culpability in all of this. I don't know how you're not. The level of cognitive dissonance that these people have is fucking mental.
Yeah. But all that to say is, like a positive thing to
all
have.
All that to say.
Like a party.
Right.
With Zara and Jeremy, and I think the other independents as well are joining in right. as well.
Right. I might have a reason to get out and vote now. Cause...
But the thing is, again, I think you were like, oh, is it called Your Party? And it was like, because the website that they've got is called Your Party. But then I'm pretty sure I saw Zara responding to something where she's like, oh, it's not actually called that. It's just the website. But I'm just like, if that is the case, like, oh, I just feel like, come on, just pick a name. Like, because this, yeah. again, I just feel like it's, I feel like there's momentum there from the second that she, like, made that post, there was momentum. I just feel like it's kind of losing a bit.
I feel like that's always been a criticism of, like, Corbyn's, to be honest with you, which is the one thing I will concede to, which is that he may not be very politically shrewd or very, like, he may not be hip to marketing, which I know if you want to gain, you know, like you said, momentum and traction and stuff like that. Politics is also a game. Politics is a marketing campaign at the end of it, you know, and you can't not consider that. If you're in mainstream politics and you're in Westminster politics, you cannot forego the kind of marketing element of all of this. And in a way, it's kind of like Corbyn just cares about on the ground politics, which is great and I love it. But he has to play the game a little bit if he wants to get anywhere, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah, true. Speaking briefly on marketing and also what we're speaking for about the West, basically, I know so. Did you see how the White House used Jess Glyn, darling, hold my hand, and the jet to hold
it? Oh my God, just from the deportations. Yeah. I don't have words for it. Like, I think that social media is like ruining.
This is what I was like. I was like, what? That to me, like, obviously it was horrific what they've done, and just like, how can you even do that? But at the same time, I was like, what does this mean? It's very Black Mirror, like, literally, like,
very, very Black Mirror.
Like, because that whole Jet 2 thing, which again, I don't understand why this year it stuck off, because it's actually, even obviously the whole Jess Glyn playing on Jet 2 adverts has been a thing for ages, but even like the past couple of years, it's been a TikTok sound. But I don't get why it's this year that it suddenly took off massively and it's all been a massive thing. But to see that travel so far to the extent that now the White House under the Trump administration is using that sound to mimic, like, people. It's just the fact that it's like, that's a government account. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's not just like, even with us, right? Like, we can do whatever we want on socials because no one's telling us what to do. That's like
there's a level of professionalism that they should maintain. Like, that, this is like the highest kind of like government authority of like the one of the strongest, if not the strongest, most powerful nation in the world. Like, that's not the level of, I mean, just on one level, they shouldn't be. This is not for you. Like, go make that video on your personal TikTok account, you know, not on a government official TikTok account. But also, like, it's nothing to laugh about. Like, deportations are inherently violent. Like, they are, like, particularly the rollout of these, deportations and detentions in America. Like, it has been documented extensively how violent they are. They're like separating families, children, like minors, keeping them in detention camps, like mistreating them, not looking after them properly, like not giving them their, like, you know, due legal course. And like, it's so bad. It is dire. It's a dire situation. To now make light of something like that is... And that people are laughing and finding it funny, and I'm like, you lot are fucking soulless. Like, not everything is a trend, actually. Sorry. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. I think as well, it's like, even if you were to, like, I think be quite ignorant and argue, oh no, but it's like, it's because they're here illegally, it's because, like, they've done X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. Even if you were to, like, take all that and be like, fine, like, whatever, like, you believe that, it's still negative. It's still a sad thing. Like, you know what I mean?
No, but
it's,
they you're don't still think removing so. That's someone. It. Like, they don't think so. Like, they think that, and this is what it's, what, why this narrative and, like, migrants that has been, like, kind of developing over years is so dangerous, because people genuinely look at these people as like enemies. And they genuinely look at them as ops. They are like leeches. They're parasitic. They're violent criminals. They're rapists. They're abusive. They're, you know, they've come to like destabilize our country. And that's genuinely what they believe in their head. So when they're seeing those videos, they're not seeing like, you know, innocent, vulnerable people. They're seeing enemies. You know, they're like, yeah, this is a dangerous criminal. I'm glad that they're getting their comeuppance. That's what they're seeing, you know. So, and it's a very extremist, radical view to have, you know, and we don't talk about that enough, but...
Yeah. Anyway, going back from that other tangent again, I do hope that there's momentum that surrounds this new party, whatever it
is. Just drop them a message and be like, if you need a campaign manager, I am free. I can edit videos. Like, yeah. I'll do it.
Yeah. I think one final thing to discuss on this area is something that... Sludge Mark raised, which I thought was an interesting point, and they were just saying like, we're not even trying to make any point, we're just asking like what people think. Why do you think that there's a need for them to start a new party that represents the left rather than trying to align themselves with the Greens, for example?
Corbyn's weakness is also his strength, so the fact that he doesn't play into like mainstream, like, what would the word be? You know, this protocol, marketing game, yeah, like this marketing, yeah, this like marketing game, let's just call it, you know, like he doesn't pay into that. And he's, like I said, he's very on the ground level of politics. Like if you go to like Islington, which is his constituency, and you talk to me, do you remember there was one time where someone was there interviewing him, and in the course of the interview, and this person like did a Twitter thread about it, actually, they were like, they made a video of trying to interview him, and like genuinely, like every so often, more and more people were coming up to be like, you help me with this, thank you, you help me with this, thank you. And this person then expanded and said, even beyond what they filmed, like they couldn't get through like 5 minutes of talking to him without someone else coming to express some level of admiration or gratitude or something to Corbyn. He is so wildly loved. He just doesn't really know how to play the politics game. But again, I think that's because he is very underground. He has like real life connections with real life people. And I think people buy into that. And that's something that politics lacks. I don't know a single mainstream politician that people could say that about. Even Zara Sultana, as much as I love her, even her, like, I don't think people can say that about her. And she's got big bollocks, Zara, like, and I back, and I really, I do appreciate that about her. But I don't know any mainstream politician who has that level of like pull and admiration from on the ground level of, you know, politics. And I think really that is what it is. I think that politics often forgets that it's not just empty platitudes, you know. People actually want to feel connected to their politicians that are representing them. People want to be able to have real life human interactions with their politicians, because that's ultimately, before anything, that's what they're there for. They're there to serve the constituents, you know. And I think Corbyn's the only one who seems to be cognizant of that fact. I think also, as I keep saying, I think the Palestinian genocide has been a watershed for a lot of people in terms of political sensibilities. And I think that the Greens, unfortunately, given everything that they stand for, they didn't stand up enough. They didn't. I remember initially as well, certain bills, like they just weren't, the voting records just wasn't quite right.
Sticking on the topic of Palestine then, obviously a lot has happened in the past 2 months. Obviously where we're at now is that the situation in Gaza is even more dire. It's been impossible basically to get aid into Gaza. Or sufficient aid into Gaza for the past couple of months. I think it was May or maybe March, I'm not sure. It's been going on for months. Yeah. I mean, it's got to a point now where it is literal like famine. Like, and I'm tentative about using the word famine because I think
it's been declared.
But I think the reason why I'm tentative about it is because it kind of implies that it's like not,
oh, there's been a drought, yeah, or something. It's not. It's a manufactured famine. Like, and really what that means is genocide. Like a manufactured famine is genocide.
I mean, that is something that I've seen people speak about. And they're like, oh, if you're wondering why it is that it seems like so many more bigger figures are speaking out about Gaza now, it's because they can now use the term famine as opposed to genocide.
I want to talk about that, actually. So wait, so firstly, yeah, I think that the situation is just getting more and more dire. Every time we talk about it, I know I say this, but it's like, you'd think it can't get worse, and then it does. Like, the level of, like, depravity from Israel is, like, unrelenting. I don't understand how anyone feasibly at this point can, in good conscience, like, play both sides or even, excuse me, like, support Israel. Not only are they withholding aid, but they are literally, like, just point blank shooting people who go to collect aid.
Yeah.
As in, like, there is literally no way out of this situation for Palestinians.
I think I heard something as well about how, like, their whole thing of is that when they are actually allowing aid in, it's only distributed by private firms. They are then the ones that are then, like, literally shooting people when they're coming to get food or whatever. Because as well, when you've deprived people of food for so long, obviously it's crazy. It's just creating a vacuum because the situation is so dire, people are so desperate that it's gonna get, like, intense, and their response to that is just to shoot people.
To shoot people, it's mental. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just it's unrelenting, and I hate Keir Starmer.
Well, speaking of him, obviously I did a double take when I saw this, because again, like you said, you think that things don't, like, surprise you. You think it can't get any worse.
And it's, like, so audacious comes out of his mouth in your life.
Yeah. So I think the title that I saw was, Starmer says the UK will recognise Palestinian state unless Israel meets certain conditions.
I saw that as well. As in, like, this is... And it's mental, because this... If you already weren't aware of the fact that, you know, the UK and other Western powers are playing... using Palestine as a pawn in a political game, and actually that the entire creation of Israel as its own nation state was, you know, the West using it as a pawn. If you don't believe that, like, that says it all. That literally says it all. As in, like, who the fuck are you to be the arbiter of whether Palestinian statehood is recognized? Like, why do you get to use your discernment? Why is that at your discretion? Why is Palestinian statehood at your discretion? It is an unequivocal truth, right? It's an inalienable right of the Palestinian people to have Palestinian, like, statehood. Why on earth does the UK get to decide that and then also add caveats to that? So what happens now? So if Israel meet their conditions, they're not going to recognize Palestinian statehood.
Yeah, it's like,
how does that work?
So the steps that the UK is requiring Israel to take involve agreeing to a ceasefire, committing to a long-term sustainable peace that delivers a two-state solution, and allowing the United Nations to restart the supply of aid, no annexations in the West Bank.
And we know they're not going to do it. Like, yeah, we know Israel are not going to meet these demands. Like, people have been saying to Israel for a very long time, like, the UN has been saying it, like, all of these huge human rights charities and organizations have been saying to Israel, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. They don't give a fuck. They don't give a single flying fuck. Like, you think they're going to listen to you now when they're, like, a year and a half deep into this?
The thing is, the UK government has previously said recognition should come at a point where it can have maximum impact as part of a peace process. But I think you'd be silly to ignore the context behind this, in that the G7 summit is coming up, I think, in September, and France has already said that at that they are going to announce that they recognise the Palestinian state.
Yeah.
So I think Keir's seen that and been like, oh shit, well, I need to decide whether or not I'm going to do that now. Mm-hmm. Let me look like I'm doing something.
So that's it. Like, for them, it's for political gain, right? Like, it's a chess piece. You know, like, the question of Palestinian statehood is a chess piece for them. It's not a fundamental human right.
I also just don't understand as well, because part of the agreement was that, oh, working towards a two-state solution. But then it's like, but then you're saying that if they do work towards that, you won't recognise Palestinian state. So it doesn't make any sense anyway.
I just keep thinking, like, if you recognise that they have a right to statehood, isn't that isn't that like a what's this thing? Like an unequivocal thing? Like it shouldn't be. It's not in question, yeah. Right? Like if you recognize it in the first instance, like that should stand.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be dependent on whether Israel do or don't do certain things. Yeah. Like, and also, like, I think they have to ask themselves, like, what are they prepared to apply the consequences? Like,
yeah, it's opening a can of worms, really. Right? Like, if you're doing that, then it's like a load of other questions about well, if this is the case, then
right, because Israel, I don't believe that Israel will adhere to, you know, the same Israel who agreed to a ceasefire and then break it like immediately after. Like, yeah. I do not believe that they will agree to these demands.
They've already said that. I think it was that a jihadist state on Israel's border now will threaten the UK, Britain tomorrow. That was their response to this. So,
anyways, I just think like what would happen like if because Israel will not agree to these demands. So what will Keir Starmer do? Will he acknowledge? Will he ratify like Palestinian statehood? And if he does do that, if he keeps his word and he does do that, what will then follow? Will he stop selling arms to Israel? Will he stop sharing intelligence with Israel?
But then, like you say, like, I can't really see that happening.
No, I know it's not gonna.
So
it's just like, it's lip service. And Israel know that, and that's why they're not gonna take it seriously.
It's just mad, like, seeing that, like Starmer says the UK will recognize a Palestinian state unless Israel, like, agrees to a ceasefire.
It's so audacious. It's like, who are you? Who are you?
Anyway, to round things off on a positive note, obviously, shout out to England's Lionesses that won the Euros.
Twice, isn't it?
Yes, 2 years in a row. Well, not two tournaments in a row now. So yeah, props to them. But also, in light of that, Gurinder Chadha's come out and said...
Is it because of that?
I think she said the day before the final, like, she was in Basel where the final was taking place, and she was like, oh yeah, like, teased, like, oh yeah, like, just so you know, like, this is actually, like, probably happening. Like, so yeah, context, Bend It Like Beckham, they're gonna give it a sequel.
Absolute icon of a film.
Well, they want to give it a sequel. So Gurinder's come out and said, oh yeah, like, I think I've obviously let it sit for a while, because it's been, like, what, 20, 25 years?
So, like, in the anniversary recently, I think it was, like, at least 20.
Yeah. And she said, I think she's been saying, like, oh, it's been something that she wants to do, but thinks now's the right time. And I think I would agree, like, obviously, like, women's football, particularly in the UK, is just taken so much more seriously now. Mm. And it's given, like, its dues. Obviously, it's still got a long way to go in terms of how it's viewed and treated by the general UK public.
Yeah.
But I think riding on that success that the Lionesses have had can only be a good thing. So I think she said that the original cast are aware that it's happening, but they obviously want to see a script before they commit to anything.
Bend It Like Beckham is an absolute, like, shining beacon of, like, British cinema. I flip in love. I actually love Gurinder Chadha as a director, because she did Angus Thongs as well. But listen, that film means so much to me, guys. It's very, very dear to me.
When's that sequel coming?
Oh, God, imagine. I'd love it. But I don't know. I feel like Bend It Like Beckham is it means a lot, I think, to a lot of South Asia. But I think it's one of those films that I think typically with South Asians, like, when there's something that's, like, South Asian focus, it's mainly always South Asian audiences, whereas I feel like Bend It Like Beckham is like a national treasure, like,
yeah.
And like everyone across all demographics love it, you know. So
it is like a thing of its own in that sense.
It is.
I think when you think of other, like, kind of famous British Asian films, there's still, like, a lot of, like, it's still very much kind of contained, I'd say, to a British Asian audience.
Absolutely.
Whereas this is just, I mean, I don't know if I would call it a British Asian film, because it revolves around that.
It is, yeah. It is a British Asian film, like a British Asian director, British Asian characters, actors. It is. But again, it's one of those ones that's not just self-contained within our community, and, like, actually everyone loves it. So I am very excited to see what the sequel is. And I will just say that I don't know the name of the actress who played Jasminder.
Parminder.
She should have had the career that Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't know, people always say it.
Yeah.
People always say it, but justice. Because I was watching Bird Box the other day. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Sandra Bullock, well, she's in it. She plays a very small role.
That's the thing I was going to say. Like, she is about, and I've seen her, like, especially in, like, kind of, like, murder mystery kind of vibes.
Right,
like,
is it? She was actually in,
what's it called? Netflix's 30 Reasons Why as well. She was, like, a therapist in it. So she does pop up, but it's always in like side roles and stuff.
Small, tiny supporting cast.
Where you compare that to Keira Knightley, who's obviously like
shot to stardom.
Yeah,
and yeah, not saying that she doesn't deserve that, but Pominda should also have, because that film was like, you know, both of their like, I don't know if it's a debut film, but one of the big ones that kind of like kickstarted their careers. Yeah, justice for Argyle, and I hope she gets her flowers finally with this film.
Yeah. The thing is, like, me and Mayanka were discussing it, and we were like, I hope it doesn't ruin it. But I was kind of like, well, I think,
I trust her in there.
Yeah, I trust her. But also, I think because it's been so long, I think it's now, like, I don't think you could. I think even if the film didn't really deliver, it still wouldn't, like...
Do you know what? Yeah. It would be seen as, like, its own entity. I feel like it's... I would just love... So, you know, like, that era of like films, like, and like, this is why I love Gurinder, because like Bender, like Beckham and like Angus Thongs and stuff, like that era of films, like, we don't have that anymore, like, and I love films from that era and that kind of style, and I just, my wish for that is that there's a bit of a nostalgic element to it. I just would love it. I would love to have that bit of, like, for it to be a bit evocative of that time, you know.
The soundtrack, I would love
that.
As well.
The soundtrack is incredible. Like, I might watch it tonight. I can't. I might put it on at the wedding house in the background while I flip and stick flowers in foam.
No, I think you're right about how they don't really make movies like that anymore. Like, I'm just thinking, because I think it's just ones that are focused on, like, have family at the core, but it's not necessarily some big... like, message. It's more just people living life,
right,
and reflecting the reality of that.
And I think a lot of that is, like, I think Marvel and, like,
I was that
changed
that, like,
a lot.
It's just,
films have to be, like, big budget blockbusters to have a flipping competing chance. We don't get those, like, you know, low budget, like, good British classic. Like, it's not, there's been a bit of a decline there, hasn't there? But I'd love to see it. I would love to see it.
Yeah.
Like, that era of films, like, Wild Child, St. Trinians. Yeah, did you ever watch them?
Yeah, noughties.
Do you, like, know what I mean? Them noughties films, like, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see a bit of an homage to that. I'd love for it to feel nostalgic.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what direction they take the storyline in as well. I suppose it depends on which characters come back and that.
To be fair, they made Bridget Jones recently, which that I would put that in a similar category of, like, British classics. Now I'm excited.
Yeah, I think she also said that she wants, like, some of the lionesses to have cameos in it as well.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Sweet. So that rounds things off for today. I think we've got a bit of a longer episode, but it makes sense.
A lot of catching up to do.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week. Hopefully back to normal now.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, everyone, and we'll see you then.
See you later. Bye.